Urjen yirje nepsan sam pamma kesre dongbo la yamsem chokang ojem nye pamam joni jisa cha. Kordan khando mambu kore cheji jisa da dibji shingye lapshir shaksa solangir pamma sada ham. Nimshon darab shambo la nimshon da la vamshir kore gadaan lonjen vachir sol. Shodan dhammo ojeve sol. Kanzan dosam garavakar san panma kara jamba nikhanga sozara namnya tetan jarsa so katar lama namla sorvandeva masam jime kira paro shina marhi manga namki nguvanyad sozara re yikhi shoyara va dosam jare yamla sorvandeva omen chigyan je pavdana dosam sanji gengye nguvanyad Rāṁsīṁ chūrkāṁ āṁsīṁ tāṁsāpī sāvīr-lāma nāṁlā-sarvāṇḍeva First, I want to say thank you to the Sangha, the Seattle Insight Meditation Center, to invite me to give a what we call Dharma talk. Also, it was very nice for me to run into some long-time friends whom I haven't met for a while. I haven't been back here almost last 5 or 6 years, which is hard to believe. As you know that during the pandemic, many of us didn't travel so much, but I used to come to Seattle and also Olympia and to lead a meditation retreat. Also, I gave a few talks at inside Seattle. It was at a different location, and this is a new home, very lovely space. I'm very happy to just be here. So, anyway, I asked Steve, what should I talk about? Steve pretty much told me that I can say whatever I want to say. We don't have any kind of particular topic right now tonight, but maybe it would be nice to talk about the idol of a bodhisattva, which seems to be relevant to each of us, especially in this time of our life. And because, as you can see that, there are a lot of turmoils happening everywhere in the world, externally, internally. If you look around, there's a lot of turmoil, conflict developing in many places within this country as well as also beyond, war, violence, all kind of crisis, ecological crisis, political instability, and then also many people are going through right now a lot of turmoil, internal turmoil, and somehow this is a not particularly bad time or good time, but it's very in many ways intense. That's all I can see. We can call this age of intensity. How about that? Everything is a little bit intense. I don't think that is a phenomenon of one person or a few people. If you ask other people, people will tell you that they agree that this is a kind of age of intensity. Somehow many people are just feeling anxiety, stress, uncertainty, insecurity. And lots of people actually don't know how to deal with this internal turmoil. And luckily we have lots of tools how to work with our internal turmoil, our emotions, which is the Buddhist practices. They are very wonderful tools that we can use. Anyway, also I heard that the human happiness is not increasing, it's gone down. And that is, in some sense, a very strange development because you think that somehow we're going to be happier as a species or as a society because we are pretty much dedicating so much energy, resources to create a happier society and more luxurious and more comfortable society. So if we look at today's world, we are living with so much abundance and blessings and opportunities. This is almost a golden era that no previous generations actually witnessed. For example, in today's world, most people have an opportunity to go to school and to get education. And also, this is the first time that we have a very high number of educated and literate population. Whereas in the old days, most people were not actually educated. Most people even didn't know how to read. As Steve introduced to me, that I grew up in Tibet. In the old days in Tibet, the only people who knew how to read are actually monastics, the monks and the nuns. Hardly people know how to read. And also, we didn't have any bathtubs and showers. How did anybody took a shower in Tibet in the old days? People just lived a very simple life. For example, if you go to northern Tibet, where the altitude is so high, it would be like 15,000 feet from sea level. In the old days, some of the Tibetan nomads lived in tents made out of yak hair, in such a harsh and treacherous environment, with a very simple food. And yet, I think people lived with some sense of peace and contentment. So when you think of like the life of the previous generations, in today's world, we have just so much abundance, just unbelievable. Lots of food, entertainment, and perhaps even our apartment in modern days are maybe much more comfortable than palace of the previous emperors and kings and queens. So you can even go outside today. You can have Thai food if you want, or you can have Italian ravioli if you want this evening, or you can maybe have an Ethiopian restaurant, go there, eat Ethiopian food. There's lots of abundance. And then not only that, we have also all these psychological systems. We are using psychotherapy to heal ourselves, but somehow the human happiness is kind of going down. That's what I keep hearing. So I feel that the bodhisattva idea is very relevant to today's world. And maybe many of you know what the bodhisattva is. Bodhisattva is almost a kind of ideal, or more archetypal ideal, means awakened hero or heroine who is basically courageous, altruistic, and whose heart is completely open, and who's not afraid of life. And not only that, who has the guts to take or embrace all situations in this very life as a spiritual path. Spiritual path, path of courage, compassion, and love. That is the ideal of a bodhisattva. For example, in Mahayana Buddhism, the objective of spirituality, or in other words, the Dharma, is actually to become a bodhisattva in this very lifetime. That is the ultimate goal, pretty much for all the people who practice Mahayana. Mahayana is the Buddhist tradition that is embraced very much in Asia, especially in Far East Asia, like China and Japan and Korea and so forth. If you go to places in China, also in other countries, sometimes they would have this giant statues of bodhisattvas, like a Kuan Yin, and sometimes they even dedicate a whole mountain to an archetypal bodhisattva, like Avalokiteshvara or Manjushuru or Bodhisattva Samantabhadra. There are like these amazing mountains in Asia, which are dedicated to a bodhisattva, as a border bodhisattva, and people travel days on a pilgrimage and to visit these amazing majestic mountains, which are supposed to be a border of these archetypal bodhisattvas. And then the idea is that when you reach it there, somehow the heart of bodhisattva would be awakened within yourself. Also, we often take the bodhisattva's vow every day, and trying to live and practice the path of bodhisattva in each year and every day. There is even a bodhisattva's ordination a ceremony where you take the bodhisattva's ordination or vow from a Dharma teacher or Buddhist teacher, and then officially you can become a bodhisattva. So bodhisattva is perhaps the most important ideal or spiritual ideal in the Mahayana Buddhism. So much that almost we don't try to become Buddha, we try to be bodhisattva. And that's how important it is. But let me go back to the very principle of the bodhisattva. Bodhisattva means to be basically courageous and to be compassionate. And it's all about not to run away from life, not to escape from life, but to embrace the fullness of human life with courage and open heart. Whereas sometimes spirituality can be a little bit escapism, because life is very difficult sometimes. We all know that life is very challenging sometimes. I think to be human is sometimes very challenging, and sometimes very fun to be human being. I'm sure we have many moments we are so happy, our heart is dancing, and we feel that we have chosen the right planet and the galaxies, the right incarnation, the right body, the right kind of whatever incarnation. Right, we have lots of moments of just total bliss and joy. Sometimes life is just so wonderful. I'm sure you have those moments, not just here and there, but many times a day. You know, sometimes you go to beach, maybe you just run on the beach with the bare feet, and you go back, you just go to maybe your home and have a nice whatever, spaghetti or some vegetarian food, listen to music, piano music, and you feel that everybody's doing very well in your family. So there's so much just joy in this life. There's lots of joy. And but then other times also we feel that sometimes very hard to be a human being. Life can be very difficult because there are sometimes challenges that arises. It's just part of being human too. Either challenges come from outside, like some unfavorable circumstances, like loss, separation, or challenges from within, like doubt, insecurity, fear, anger, jealousy. So it's sometimes very hard to be a human being, or even difficult to exist. One time, the Tibetan prince, Gyatso Larje, went to have an audience with Pammasambhava, the most revered Buddhist master in Tibetan Buddhism, the one who brought basically Buddhism, especially Tantric Buddhism, from India to Tibet in the 7th century. So this Tibetan prince, he was unusual. He became very spiritual at a very early age. He really didn't have any kind of interest in mundane life, like become the king or to have a power positions. He was pretty much kind of disillusioned with this life on earth. He maybe found there's no meaning in it. So he become very, very kind of spiritual. In some sense, it is very noble that he or anybody is a spiritual at a very early age. But in the audience with the Pammasambhava, he said, he's a really basically tired with this life, and he asked Padmasambhava help him not to come back to this world, not to reincarnate. He said, I'm tired with this life. I don't want to reincarnate. Just help me. Just teach me where to not come back to exist. And Padmasambhava almost chastised him. Padmasambhava said, what are you talking about, basically? Basically, Padmasambhava said that this life is very beautiful. Even with the suffering, it's very beautiful. And then Padmasambhava almost like joked and said, are you trying to convince me to give my bodhisattva's vow? So just like that, life can be sometimes, of course, very difficult. And to be human is not always easy, too. I'm sure we all have moments here and there. I just feel that it's really difficult to be human being, especially when we have to go through pain, emotional pain, pain from loss, separation, or pain from dealing with sometimes difficulties, like even sometimes hardships, and also there are people who go through just unbelievable trauma and tragedies. And luckily, many people don't go through traumas and tragedies that also many people go in this world too. I have this role, this spiritual teacher's role. During last 10 minutes greeting, somebody asked me, do you do an interview? We say interview, not really the interview that you see often. Usually in the lots of Buddhist sanghas, we have a, we call in Tibetan, jalka, which has totally different meaning. Jalka means some kind of sacred holy meeting or something like that, very beautiful term. But in the West, we call it interview. So when you go to see a Dharma teacher, you can say, oh, I'm going to interview with that Dharma teacher. We don't say that in Tibetan culture. That's very fancy, very like a religious word. In jalka means the holy meeting. Oh, I'm going to have a holy meeting with the Dalai Lama. People can get very excited. Here we don't say, oh, I'm going to have a holy meeting with this Dharma teacher. We say, oh, I'm going to have interview with her or him, like that. And it's so one of you asks me, do I do any interview? It's so such an interesting question, because I used to do lots of interviews. Actually, I had a program one time. This is hard to believe, where I did an interview with many, many people for 2 days sometimes. I think I have this program called a Dharma Apprenticeship Program, where there will be like a lot of people, maybe like 60 or 70 people. And I used to do interview with each of them every now and then, and the interview goes for sometimes literally 2 days. I even don't know how I was able to do that. Of course, I was much younger than now. When you are young, you have much more energy for everything, right? But I also used to do lots of interviews. And one thing I learned is that from interview, you really hear lots of stories. Lots of stories. You hear the interior stories that people would not share with anybody else. People used to share me their deepest pain, sorrow, and their tragedy, their trauma with me, because I play a role as the Dharma teacher, and people share all these stories with me with total trust and openness. And I used to listen to them and give advice. But what I learned is that people are going through so much. We just don't see that, right? Sometimes we think, oh, maybe I'm the one who's going through harder time. Everybody looks okay. Everybody looks cool, actually, outside. You know, everyone is driving car, got nice hairstyle, especially when they're wear sunglasses. Everybody, looks so good, especially when you go to Paris, everybody looks so happy and they're all wearing nice dress. You see, everybody looks so good. Everybody looks good usually, don't you think, when you go outside and look around? I think everybody looks good at this dress. That's what I see. Maybe I'm living in some kind of false perception. Everybody looks pretty good. When I come to America, this was 30 years ago, sometimes I would ride in the car and I look around and I thought, oh, these people are so cool. You see, all these people in the cars and everyone is driving a car and lots of people would be wearing sunglasses. So anyway, what I'm trying to say is that when you walk outside, if you go to like department store where everybody's shopping, if you go to some big restaurant, everyone's eating, laughing, it looks like everyone's doing kind of pretty good. Everybody is really doing okay, maybe except me. But we are always walking with the facade, this kind of persona. We are holding everything to ourselves. We are holding our pain, our trauma, our loneliness, our hardships, our challenge to ourselves. We actually don't, of course, share. We don't express that all the time because that won't be even practical, too, because sometimes we have to put on persona to be able to even function and to be able to live and to perform our duties in everyday life, whatever that might be. But I learned that that people carry so much suffering. So it just opened my eyes and let me realize that as human beings, people go through so much difficulties, and life can be very, very painful, it can be very difficult. A Buddhist teacher said that he's not afraid of death, but he's afraid of life. I think what he said has some truth because sometimes life can be very difficult. It's very difficult to truly live life because life comes with lots of pain. That's why you have this, what do we call spiritual escapism? And where in the old days, or maybe even today, people use spirituality to escape from life, escape from reality, or to close their heart and to basically numb their mind and their heart so they don't have to feel the pain, the rawness of life. And whereas the path of Bodhisattva is to basically not to escape from life and life's challenges, pain, life is basically wrath, life is rawness, but open your heart to life and to take everything that life presents you as a path of Bodhisattva. Even embrace suffering as a path of Bodhisattva. And not only your own suffering, but also suffering of the world. To just embrace the suffering and realizing that suffering is part of life. Just embrace suffering and to also find the meaning in the suffering. Because suffering is sometimes the doorway to the absolute freedom. Especially if you actually take the Bodhisattva's path, then suffering is not just purely intrinsically meaningless, just purely unwholesome. Suffering can be very beautiful. Suffering can be sometimes the immediate doorway to the liberation. There was this very amazing Tibetan master. He lived perhaps, I forgot, 12th or maybe 13th century or maybe even 11th century. His name is Bodhapa. He said, if you, he said, seek the happiness in the suffering. This is a very interesting phrase. Seek happiness in the suffering. Kind of doesn't make sense. You see? Usually we would not think that we should seek happiness in suffering. We think that maybe we should run away from suffering in order to find happiness. But he said, if you want to find happiness, seek that in the suffering. And what he's saying is that there is a meaning, there's actually transcendence in the suffering. So if you embrace your own suffering, suffering of others, and then you can actually use your suffering as a path of compassion, you can develop compassion. You can have a compassion towards yourself, and also you can understand suffering of the world too. For example, a gratitude practice. When I do gratitude practice, I also invite people to do gratitude practice, which is a really wonderful practice, gratitude practice. Usually when we practice gratitude, we think a whole list of wonderful things that happen to us, that is happening in our life, such as good weather, food, friendship, many blessings we can be grateful to, all of them. But also sometimes I invite people to say thank you to the suffering that you went through. And we can be grateful to all the headaches, heartaches that we went through, because sometimes because of suffering, we become better person. We become more compassionate. We become more like matured. And if we don't suffer, maybe we don't really know what compassion is. How can we know what compassion is? How can we be compassionate towards others if we never suffered? So suffering can be sometimes this wonderful path through which that we learn how to open heart and to have a compassion towards oneself and towards everybody, because now we know what suffering is, what suffering of other people might be. I tell one story. I don't have lots of a great anecdote, bodhisattva's anecdote, but I want to tell you one story, how the bodhisattva's path has been helpful to me at a personal level. This was many years ago, before we are using Zoom. I think we had another this medium called face, not what to call, I even forgot what it's called, Skype, right? Skype? See, I'm forgetting even the name of that medium. The Skype, perhaps now lots of young people don't know what it is, but there was a Skype that everybody used, even in Tibet. Now each country uses a different kind of mediums, but in Tibet they were using Skype, so we also used Skype, of course. It was developed maybe in America. Anyway, I had a chance to reconnect with many of my relatives back in Tibet, whom I haven't seen. I was so excited to talk to all my relatives, friends back in Tibet, and then I have lots of relatives, which is very wonderful. But when you have lots of relatives, the good news is that if ever you go to Tibet, if I ever go to Tibet, I don't have to cook, actually. I don't have to do grocery shopping, at least for a few months. I can just stay with this family a few nights, and with that cousin another few days, with this cousin. So that's the upside of having lots of relatives. But not so good stand up about having lots of relatives is that also one of them is always doing not so good. Either they're in trouble or they're sick. That's the also sometimes upside of having lots of relatives, because you have to then engage with them. Anyway, I remember that I started talking to all my relatives, but I remember I have one relative, this young woman. I spoke with her, and she was a fallen part. She was relatively young, and she had tuberculosis. And she was just really feeling very much hopeless, and she's young. I don't think she has lots of Buddhist training. She kind of doesn't know how to work with her suffering. So she is almost like drowning into the suffering. And she's very, very close to me, one of my relatives. And I listened to her, and then I was very challenged. I felt very bad. And then somehow I didn't talk to her for a while, because it was painful for me to see one of my relatives is really going through a hard time. And also sometimes a difficulty to sit and hear and witness somebody is having such a hard time, and especially when they are so close to you, because when they are very close, you have to engage with their suffering. It's almost that inevitable, and that can be extremely uncomfortable. So I end up talking to all my relatives who are doing very good, who are healthy, whose business thriving, and my ego is kind of happy too. These people are my people, they're my extension, whatever. I'm their extension of their ego. So I was very happy. Then luckily I was able to catch what my ego is doing. And then I decided to talk to this person, this young woman who is devastated. I just forced myself to talk to her and listen to her stories again and again. And finally, I didn't have resistance. I talked to her and gave my advice to her. And I felt that some kind of resistance, this really powerful resistance, has been broken inside me. I felt my heart got much bigger from their own. And so this is an example that sometimes we are maybe unconsciously trying to escape from the life sometimes, especially the pain, the challenges of life, and because to really feel the life's challenge can be very difficult unless we have a training in the bodhisattva's path. But see, this is an example. If we open our heart with the courage, then suffering, either your suffering or suffering of other people, becomes a path that helps you to break all your resistance in your heart and actually widen your heart, widen your compassion, widen your courage and your love. And so this is what a bodhisattva's path is. Sometimes in the East, you know, people going to mountains, they go away from the world completely, and they stay in the mountains, just meditate. And often they're regarded as very like courageous because they left the world behind. But sometimes I think to go into mountains, running away from this world, is maybe easiest thing to do. So I'm changing my attitude toward all these hermits. I used to be a big fan of a hermit. One of the gurus in my lineage is actually a very famous hermit. I have some kind of personal karmic affinity with his lineage. His name is Anam Chatterva, beloved hermit in my hometown, and it's said that he left the world at a very early age, and then he vowed not to eat any meat. He became vegetarian, and also he vowed not to wear any like animal skin, but only wear quilt made out of wools. This is like 1930s or 1920s back in Tibet. And then he went into the mountains, just stayed in the meditation retreat his whole lifetime. Every now and then he would meet with a few people who would bring food. I remember when I was a young monk, I was passing by the mountain, the very mountain he meditated. I thought, this is such amazing story, this hermit Anam Chakram. Wish I can be like him someday. I had all kind of admiration towards this hermit, and maybe I can be hermit. But I felt I'm not really courageous enough. I felt I was lazy. I don't have the courage to become hermit. I felt I'm stuck in this world. I'm just too touched this world. Maybe next lifetime, hopefully I can be born out of this crazy hermit. So I used to be a huge fan of a hermit, but now I'm changing my life. I'm changing my mind. I think to be a hermit is very easy, extremely easy, don't you think? If you go into mountains and people bring you food, maybe you don't need so much. Maybe people can bring you like quite a ramen noodle. That's kind of delicious too. And you know, you don't have to read the internet, you don't have to read the emails, you don't have to check your whatever, Facebook, you don't have to read any news. Just stay a whole lifetime in the mountains and somebody will bring food to you. That seems actually, to me, that seems really easy, not too easy actually. So I think true hermitage is this human life. This is the real hermitage. This is the real monastery. Life is a real monastery. The life, the ordinary life, to be in this world and to just go through everything that people are going through. All the challenges that the life presents you. And so to me, the perfect ground environment to practice the Dharma and to become enlightened again is this world and this life, this very human life, and this ordinary world, this ordinary life, not life of some kind of a mystic or a hermit. The ordinary life and the ordinary world can be the life of Bodhisattva. So here what I'm really doing is I'm simply just inviting everybody to become Bodhisattva. I think we are naturally Bodhisattva in some sense. We just have to go inside and cultivate the Bodhisattva's spirit, which is already in each of us. Now, let me invite everybody to do this meditation, the meditation on the four immeasurables, which goes along with the path of Bodhisattva. Let's sit together again. Please close your eyes. And now feel that you are dropping into your body and especially into your heart area. Then you can put your hand on your heart if you feel And you might like to say in silence, my heart is already compassionate, loving, altruistic, carefree. My heart has the ability to embody equanimity, dignity in all situations, and my heart has already the courage, the capacity to even transcend the illusion of a personal self or the ego, and feel that there's a Avalokiteshvara inside you, there's a Aryatara inside you, which is your own heart, the Buddha of compassion or Buddha of love. Now imagine that you have invited a group of people. You call them your beloved ones, such as your family members, your children, your parents, your partner, your sisters, brothers, cousins. Imagine that right now they're sitting in front of you. Imagine that you're looking into the eyes with unconditional love and compassion. Then begin to acknowledge whatever they are going through. Maybe you know that some of them are having right now health issues, or maybe financial difficulties, or maybe you know some of them are having right now, obstacles in their career and their pursuit. Or maybe they're going through anxiety and fear. Allow yourself to bear witness to whatever they're going through without allow yourself to get stuck or to entangle with their suffering. Just witness without identifying with their suffering. So continue to bear witness to their suffering or their struggles in the spirit of a total non-judgment. Not to say, oh, this should be happening, this should not be happening to them. Just witness whatever they're going through with a compassion, open heart. And now notice how easy it is for you to open your heart towards the people you love completely, such as your family members. While your heart is wide open, in your mind, imagine that all of your friends are sitting right now in front of you on your right side. And then imagine that you have invited a person or group of people who somehow evoke your inner judgment, aversion, or even prejudice, even though you may not haven't met with them. Imagine that they are sitting right now in front of you on your left side. And now imagine that you have invited the whole humanity from everywhere, regardless of their religion, race, color, identity, and especially invite those who are sick, those who are hungry, those who are disfranchised, those who are stuck in the vicious circle of violence, poverty, injustice, Then imagine that you're looking into the eyes of every human being with your boundless compassion. Begin to acknowledge whatever people are going through, hunger, pain, fear, anxiety, confusion, hopelessness, anger, poverty, Now feel that you are expanding your compassion towards all beings, including animal species. Towards all sentient beings. And then repeat after me in silence. May all beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all beings never be separate from joy that knows no sorrow. May all beings abide in equanimity, free from bias and hatred. Shangchev semchor mbo che marti panam che yirji ki ba nyam ba me ba yo koni konda perwa ho. Thank you, everybody. Thank you for your participation with this event. I hope that this time together was meaningful for each of you. And thank you for the invitation.